Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to the Property Exchange podcast, when we're looking at what might be done to fix the housing market. This time, in the second part of our conversation with the Shadow Chancellor Mel Stride and Winkworth CEO Dominic Agace, we're looking at the big picture on the housing market. What needs to be done to get the country back on track to meet housing targets and fix the planning system? There's also the impact of the Renters' Rights Act and other legislation on the rental market. With many landlords selling up, has the balance between landlords and tenants swung too far? So I asked Mel Stride, what needs to be done now to ensure that house builders get shovels in the ground?
Well, we need to look at planning, undoubtedly. I mean, stamp duty in its own way will make the market more attractive for house builders to get involved with, so that will be a positive thing. But there's no doubt that we need to get the planning system reformed. We know that under this government, they've said they'll build 1.5 million over the Parliament new homes, and we know from what the OBR and others are saying that there's very little chance they're going to actually achieve that. And the kind of things we need to look at there, I think, are brownfield. We need to look at some densification in some areas. We need to look at some cities like London, where it's relatively low rise. You could build up a bit, not sort of, you know, Manhattan style, but you could make gains there. And with London in particular, where the house building story has been particularly weak under Sadiq Khan, We are looking at the entire London plan as it is at the moment to build, with a particular focus on brownfield sites. A number of London boroughs, in fact the majority of them, haven't really been building any new build in recent times, and obviously that's something that's very concerning.
I think we're now on emergency measures in London in terms of house building to try and reduce affordability requirements to get people building, because they're such low levels, because the economics just don't stack up for house builders. So the problem's in the post.
But despite all of that, when I speak to house builders, they still do not feel sufficiently incentivized to build. And they're also in competition for sites with people who are putting up storage facilities. They feel very unimportant and not part of policy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a difficult place to be a house builder at the moment. I don't think costs have gone up significantly. Labour issues, skill shortages, affordability criteria to be met. I think increased cost of finance, it's very difficult, certainly for the smaller developers to build. And perhaps that's where the gains can be made, is, you know, getting smaller local developers to build the properties, as well as just the sort of mega developers that have sort of national reach. You know, then you'd get perhaps more sympathetic building as well, because they're from the local communities. But the economics really and the financing is not there for them. And there's not particularly the demand there either. I mean, obviously Help to Buy was something that did fuel demand for these developers to feel comfortable to build for first-time buyers rather than just houses for families. But that hasn't been replaced. And so, you know, we're sort of left in a place where aspirations are not being met to build these houses.
So, over to you on that, Mel.
Yeah.
Should we have a son of Help to Buy?
Well, let's come to that in a sec. But I think, just to frame this this particular challenge, I think you've got cyclical issues, which are around, for example, interest rates are more elevated than they have been in the more recent past, although they've been coming down through time. They might yet go up again. Inflation has clearly been a problem, and costs for house builders has been going up, and so on. Those things will ebb and flow in a cyclical manner through time. But there are structural issues, and these are the things that that government must really focus on, and that is around planning and the availability of land to build on and making the process as inexpensive and as quick and as efficient as possible. And that's what the shadow housing team that we have in our party is looking very closely at. On the demand side, which is what Help to Buy is really all about, is something that we're looking at. I mean, should there be some version of that? But I do think the critical thing here is getting supply up. And also, one thing we haven't mentioned is the level of net migration, because if net migration is high, then of course the demand on housing goes up as well. Now, changes that we brought in at the tail end of our time in office actually have led to substantial reductions in the level of net migration, and that is another means of keeping the pressure off the housing market as well as public services more generally.
Now, we've said the word developer and development quite a lot in the last few minutes, but for many people, that's a dirty word. Mel, how would you overcome the ingrained NIMBYism of the British towards development in any form?
Well, I think most people get the fact that it's important that we build homes, because most people, for example, care about young people, no matter what age you are. And we've got to recognise that actually, if you're below the age of your early 40s, actually, you missed out on the housing price boom that I and perhaps everybody around this table benefited from back in the day. But what we've got to do is come up with clear plans to show how you can build much more than we are at the moment, with a much more efficient planning process, in a way that doesn't trample all over the green belt, doesn't plonk developments in places with no infrastructure to support it, and thereby earns a much higher level of sort of local consent for those kind of developments. And that's the work that we're doing at the moment.
Would you be pro the construction of new towns?
Potentially, yes. No, we wouldn't necessarily be entirely against that. I mean, there have been very many examples of that kind of development in the past. Poundsbury, for example, you think of as a huge success some time ago now, but down in Dorset, you know, developments like that, if they're done in the right way, can be hugely successful.
Now, I'd like to get back to something we were talking about before we started recording this, was with the link between being a conservative and home ownership, that you used to see home ownership as a rite of passage. You became a grown-up when you bought your first home. How did your party manage to lose kind of the connection with that vision?
Well, it's a very interesting question. I'm not sure we entirely lost the vision, but I do accept that there's been a struggle, particularly around home ownership, and it has led to a situation through time whereby far too few younger people in particular have that opportunity. And it's so important, because I think back to my own life when I was younger and went to university in the kind of 1980s, and various things were happening then that were about aspiration and opportunity, and property was part of it. So when I left university, I set up my own business, for example, and led to creating companies here and in the United States. And that was in an environment in which taxes on businesses were being reduced, red tape was being cut back, we had Big Bang in the city, Nigel Lawson was doing great things to help drive the economy forward. And you could, if you worked hard, it wasn't dead easy to get on the housing market, but you could do it, get on that housing market. And of course, once you've got that key to your first property, it becomes the foundation for the rest of your life. And for me, it was the foundation for the wife that I was yet to meet, for the family I was yet to create. So it's hugely important, right at the centre of that kind of aspiration, opportunity society that we want. And as a party, what we're looking at, to broaden this discussion out just for a second, is not just where does property ownership fit in with that, but where do other opportunities fit into that as well? Buying into, you know, higher paid jobs, owning shares, for example, which has diminished very considerably through time, an entrepreneurial society in which going out there and taking risks and having a go and creating wealth and jobs gets celebrated and encouraged every turn. We want to get back to that. And I think property has kind of been lost in the middle of all of that story.
I think we all get the sense when we're talking to Gen Z colleagues of this massive gap between us, that I was able to climb onto the housing ladder with some difficulty, but I could do it. And they just see it as an impossibility. Do you feel that when you're talking to the 20-somethings you work with?
Yeah, I think that is the perception. I mean, God, I felt that about the generation above me as well. Then the property prices that were paid by, you know, we hear about them and what they did, you know, during the 80s, 90s or, you know, around those times. But no, look, I mean, it is more extreme now. It's interesting. Property prices in London have become more affordable in the last 10, 12 years. So they've gone nowhere. So if the last, most recent generation is becoming a bit easier, what is not perhaps becoming easier is to, don't say, pay the stamp duty to get the opportunity. They can pay the rent and they can probably afford the mortgage on these properties. But to save that block of money to get into it is a whole another issue. And perhaps that's the barrier that was not there in previous generations. You know, that is another massive thing. I mean, if it's, how do you save that much money as well as paying significant rents? Because rents have gone up with wage inflation, whereas house prices actually haven't in London.
Rents, that's the word I wanted to hear, because I want to talk about the Renters' Rights Act, Mel. Now, this is a piece of legislation coming in May that's partly the product of some conservative thinking, and it's a bit the policies of the current government. Do you think this legislation is going to bring a revolution to the rental market, unlike anything we've seen for about four decades? Do you think it's a good deal for either side, for landlords, for tenants?
Overall, I don't think it's a good deal. And we've seen it in operation in Scotland, for example. And at its heart, what it's doing, of course, is just making it less attractive to be a landlord. And if you do that and you make it more expensive and less attractive to do that, various things happen. One is you'll get less landlords in the market. And a second thing is that you'll find that rent, there's an upward pressure on rents as a result of it just being more difficult to provide that kind of property rental opportunity. So I think that's an area actually that we should be rather concerned about.
What would you do about it, though?
Well, we're looking at the legislation, and if we are to form the next government, then we'll have plenty to say in our manifesto about changes that we might make. And that policy is something that we're working up at the moment. But our starting point is that what you want to do, and it's a similar argument to stamp duty, is you want to make it as inexpensive and as easy for people to come in and out of the market, to provide in the market, to be a consumer in the market, and so on. And this kind of legislation, along with other examples of a similar thing from this government, like the Employment Rights Act, for example, that just makes it more expensive to employ people. And that has the effect, obviously, of increasing unemployment, for example. So all of these things we want to look at through that lens of how do you have more efficient allocation of resources, more efficient markets, things that are better for the economy, and get those costs and the red tape out of those markets wherever we can.
I think you'll see. I mean, historically, there's just been a balance that swung between tenant and landlord for decades now, and there is a very healthy balance that can be struck where, you know, there's satisfaction of standards, quality landlords in the marketplace, a good investment for a landlord for their pension. You know, all those things can be brought together, and I think the danger, and you know, we're now in it, so we will sort of find out. You know, the danger that is unfolding is that balance has gone too far one way, and it does need landlords to proactively choose to be in the sector, not just they're not there by obligation. So I think some of the things, if they play out, then we will see a shortage. But it can be done well, and I think there'll be opportunities to hopefully reform it and improve it over the years.
But aren't some of your clients who've been really good landlords the kind of people that you really want to have that role, who have an idea of the legal responsibilities, know how to act decently? Do you not think they're being lost to the sector and they can never be won back?
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing is one of the sort of core parts of the legislation is the removal of no-fault evictions. And in our portfolios, you know, it's a very small amount of people that ever use those because there is a tenant-landlord relationship in place. So we don't foresee this as being a big challenge to our landlords who we're managing, because, you know, they're well managed, hopefully by us. You know, they're people we have adhere to all the rules and regulations on fire safety and standards and all the rest of it. So I don't think things like that are, you know, they're put in the front and saying, oh, all these terrible landlords doing all of this. But that's not the case. As you say, the sort of the vast majority are quality people looking at it as a pension, you know, alongside other investments or.
But Mel, how would you think that you were going to get that kind of responsible individual back into the buy-to-let sector?
So by getting the balance right, you know, look, nobody is advocating for having an arrangement where tenants don't quite rightly have significant protections. They should do. But if you end up in a situation, we have seen a gradual erosion, actually, of the benefits of being a landlord through time, through a considerable period of time, around tax, around regulation, and so on. And now these latest legislative changes, what happens is you just get less supply in the market. And ultimately, amongst those that get impacted by this in a negative way are those that want to rent. Okay, because prices go up, because there's less choice. It just becomes more difficult for them. And I think that's what we mustn't lose sight of.
And there we must leave it. Thanks again to you, Mel Stride, for coming in, and to you, Dominic Agueis, Winkworth CEO. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox, and the editor was Marion Hardman.